Welcome to Stout for Christ, a radio ministry of Stout Memorial United Methodist Church in Parkersburg, West Virginia, with our host, Sarah Sisson.
I'm Sarah Sisson, host of Stout for Christ, and we're glad you're listening to our radio show today. Stout for Christ is a ministry of Stout Memorial United Methodist Church located at 3329 Broad Street in Parkersburg, West Virginia. We invite you to become a member of our Stout Church family. We offer two worship services each Sunday, a contemporary worship service at 8:45 and a traditional worship just following this broadcast at 10:45. If you can't join us in person, our services are broadcast live on Facebook and YouTube. Stout for Christ is a ministry meant to help us navigate life and learn more about God's love for all people. Today we have our music minister, Terry Bush, and she will be talking a little bit more about her experience in the music industry.
The music industry. That's interesting, yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you first got involved in church music?
Well, I suppose I got involved in my first choir when I was 4 years old in the church where I grew up. And I came from a small college town, Wilmington, Ohio, which is in southwestern Ohio. And I started singing in children's choir then. And like a lot of people at that age, I just moved through each choir and was very fortunate to have a good music department in the church that I grew up in. So that's really how I got my start. And my background then evolved into college, and I was a music major for 3 of my 4 years. And then in the education system, they started non-renewing art teachers and music teachers, and I didn't want to be cut right out of the gate. So I switched my major focus into English education and graduated with a double major in voice performance and English education. So that's basically my background in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. All right. Well, what led you to serve specifically in the United Methodist Church and in the role of director of music?
The United Methodist Church was not the church denomination that I was raised in, but my mother was raised in United Brethren when she was growing up. And of course, they merged with the Methodist Church in 1968. My great uncle was head of what is now Methesco in Dayton, Ohio. He was a United Brethren minister, but became United Methodist pastor in 1968, but at that point was already the director of the seminary in Dayton, and so that's how he finished out his career. So I had that United Brethren Methodist thing going on in my head for a long time, and when I went to college, which Ohio University in Athens, mm-hmm. I immediately started attending the Methodist Church there because it was so beautiful. I started going to a Methodist church because it was pretty. That particular building, which is not a good way to choose a church, but when you're 18 years old, that seemed good to me. So that's where I started, and I have never really attended another denomination since that time. So that's really how I got my start.
Nice. And so once you were in the United Methodist Church, how did you feel led to serve in that director of music role?
When we joined Stout Memorial in 2009, in October of 2009, I joined that choir. And at the time, that was under the direction of Pam McLean. And I enjoyed being a member of that choir and knew I had directed other choirs before. I had directed the Beverly United Methodist Church Choir in Beverly, Ohio, when I first got out of college, and have sat in a visit kind of role in directing some other things, also directed community choirs in my hometown area. But Pam McLean decided that she was going to not direct that church anymore. I wanted to spend more time with her family, that church choir, and moved out of that capacity. I never once thought that I would direct that choir. I was simply asked by another person who was filling in for her if I wanted to help out. He was having issues with his older parents, and I was having issues with my older parents, so we just kind of combined and co-directed for a while. And then the church decided that they wanted to post that position. And we were told to apply for that if we wanted to continue in that capacity, which we did. Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another, and in March of 2014, they asked me if I would take that position. So I've been in that position now for 11 years. And it was not anything that I intended to do, but I did get a little nudge from God on that, who kind of led me to think that I should do this. That's the only reason I applied in a formal way for that position. So I don't know. At my age, I don't know if I will. This may be the last choir that I direct, but I certainly have enjoyed my time with them.
Well, Pam left big shoes to fill, but you've done a very good job filling them, and we're very grateful to have you around.
Thank you.
So, who or what has been your biggest musical influence in your spiritual journey?
Well, first of all, I would say both my mother and father always supported me. And then I had a phenomenal background with the music conductor at the church where I grew up. She was also my private piano teacher when I was in high school. And my parents had the foresight to start me off with piano lessons when I was six at the college in my hometown, which was Wilmington College. And so I was taking piano lessons with college students at that time, and my recitals were with them. And all of that together certainly led to the fact that every single one of them was important. Everyone was important. And I have to say the weakness in that with me was that I thought all kids had that opportunity. If I heard somebody was taking piano lessons, I just thought they had the benefits that I did of that. It wasn't until I started teaching much later that I realized that was not the case. So I was kind of naive in that sense.
Well, sounds like you had a lot of help along the way
get
you to where you did.
I did.
So what does music ministry, you spend a lot of time with this throughout the week and throughout the year with our choir. So what does the music ministry mean to you personally and spiritually?
Well, first of all, it's a very spiritual experience for me in all ways. Even if I take away the people in the choir, and because they all affect me individually. But if I just look at what I do with them, that's spiritual fulfillment for me, because I feel like I'm contributing with a talent or a gift by doing that. So I feel good about that. But I also want each of the choir members to feel like they have a family, which I hope they do feel that way, that we are a family, and that in itself is spiritual for them. And there is a fine line between performance and singing in a choir in a worship service. So I have to always remind them that it's not a performance. What we do is part of a worship service. But when you're directing, you tend to take every little mistake, every little sound that isn't right on the money, as, oh my gosh, this sounds awful. And then as soon as you think that, then you're turning it into a performance in your head. So I always tell them that when they are trying to rehearse something that's very, very difficult, don't worry about making the mistake, but when they're walking out of church after maybe something has fallen apart, just say, gosh, loud enough for others to hear, I can't believe we finally got it right. And just to look at it that way. So that's the fine line, because choir directors get into trouble, choir directors at church, if they treat it as a performance, because it's not.
Well, you do a great job of, I think, fostering a comfortable environment for your choir members, as well as allowing people to showcase their gifts to the congregation and those that watch us online. So with that, how do you choose music for Sunday services and also special occasions?
I try to do it all at one time. I have a goal that by the end of June every year, the entire schedule for the following year, starting in August or September, every Sunday is chosen. And how I do that is I use the lectionary. And I don't think people understand that, I can't speak for other churches, but in the United Methodist denomination, most ministers will use a lectionary because it's a guideline as to what would be helpful title-wise of a sermon, what hymns to choose or whatever. So my music that I choose has to go along with that. You have to try to work it in that it fits in with a sermon that may be chosen. So I sit there at the piano pulling things off the shelves and trying to function into what they need to do slot-wise. And then when you get to Advent and Lent, because I always leave those two seasons till the end, when you're in Advent, you have to know when Advent begins and try to come up with music that doesn't do too much reference to the birth of Christ per se. It has to center into the season, but not talk about things that make you feel like you're actually at Christmas Day at that moment. And that's tricky. And then I also select a cantata or a series of special things that we will do on one Sunday during Advent. And then when you get to Lent, you can't choose any music that has hallelujah, alleluia, anything that is shouting or gospel that is perky and peppy, because the music has to prepare everyone for the walk that Jesus took during those 40 days. And that can be tricky too. So that's how I do it. And then I turn over my list to the office and to Pastor Helen, and of course, most importantly, to Bonnie Lenhart, the organist, and also to Debbie Matheny, the librarian. So they have track of everything that we're going to be doing.
Well, it sounds like a lot of moving pieces and a pretty meticulous process, but I hadn't thought about how deep you have to go into it, especially around two of the biggest seasons of the year for us.
Well, and I noticed that some directors choose, like, they'll get to choir practice a little early and they'll go into the music room and try to pull something out for Sunday. Then that's what they rehearse. I couldn't live like that. And we rehearse 3 and 4 pieces ahead so that people know what's coming up. I even have some people who will change their plans just so they can be there on a particular Sunday to sing something they think they're going to like. And then I have others who decide they are going to go away because they don't like something that we're singing. So it works both ways that way.
You can't win them all.
No.
So at our church, it's a little bit different. We have two different services. We have our contemporary service at 8:45 and our 10:45 traditional service. So how have you had to balance maybe some traditional hymns with maybe a more contemporary worship style in some of your songs as well?
If we have a Sunday where the contemporary service will not be meeting and they have the opportunity to come into the 10:45, I know that there is a mixture to try to make everybody feel comfortable, and we tend to choose different hymns, although I do not choose the hymns. a lot of people think I do. So if they hear something, oh, I wish we weren't singing that, they look at me thinking, why did you choose that? I have nothing to do with choosing the hymns.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up for everybody listening.
Pastor Helen will sometimes ask me a question about it or what do I think, but that gets back to the lectionary that she might choose. So we know that the two services are very different. There's a freer style in the contemporary, all the way down to being able to get up and go get a cup of coffee during the service. We don't do that in the traditional service. Not that we just make a conscious effort not to do that, but it's just something that was never done in the traditional service. And I think we're all finding out now, especially, that there isn't that much difference, really, because both services tend to follow the same format with different music. Mm-hmm. We both hear the same sermon.
Yep.
We both take the same communion. We both have the same spiel, if there's anything going on. And we have, and then with those events, we both services attend those events. A lot of times, a contemporary service is a little more popular with some because it meets earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Just that simple factor with it. Or some people feel very much at home that they don't feel they have to really worry about dressing up, per se. But then we don't do that anymore in the traditional service much anyway. So I think that my responsibilities as director of music there is to make sure that if there are any problems with the contemporary praise band or anything like that, praise team, mm-hmm. which I know they've kind of changed that, that I can help them out with that. But they tend to do their own thing.
Yes, they do. And
that's okay. Once in a great while, I'll go in and listen before I go downstairs. But usually, the Sunday school class has already started and the contemporary services is done by the time I have an opportunity to do that. So,
what she's not saying is that the contemporary service leader can also sings in the choir, so he gets some guidance that way as well. So
He does. And that is an interesting thing because he also goes to Sunday school too.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of tease him that I know somewhere in that church he has his own little apartment, and that's really where he is.
Has to.
He's there a long time.
So, with all of that, what role do you believe music plays in deepening the congregation's worship experience? You said you've talked a little bit about how you've gone through that process of meticulously picking out how it fits in with the sermons and all mm-hmm. of that. So, sounds like you put a lot of thought to make sure it fits.
I try to. The definition of music is voice and instrument working together to create sounds that give the listener a sense of beauty. And I think that's how the music contributes to our service, is that people find a sense of beauty in that. And I know that's why the choir likes to do. We have a lot of choir members who have sung in the choir, a choir, as long as I have.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some who have great backgrounds in music experience, and others who simply are in the choir because they like to sing, or others who are honoring their mothers or their grandmothers or their fathers because they like to sing, and so they're there. But they know that they are contributing by adding a sense of beauty to the individual by the things that we do.
Absolutely. And I know for Sundays where you do the cantatas that you mentioned, there are people that make a point to make sure they go to both services just mm-hmm. because they appreciate how much work and effort goes into that, and they mm-hmm. love to hear the beautiful sound.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. What has been one of the most meaningful worship moments you've experienced as a music director?
I think every Christmas Eve is my most meaningful service, whether I'm directing or singing or simply sitting in a congregation. because there is something that happens that's almost magical on Christmas Eve. And when I say magical, I'm not talking about hocus pocus kind of magic. It's a magical concept, I think, that when you are in a Christmas Eve service, you cannot feel anything less than that you have been simply placed at the feet of God when you walk out of that service. There are some who say, I don't feel right unless it's snowing a little bit when I go out or any of that. It has more to do with, you know that this is serious business. No matter how many times you hear the nativity story, the birth of Christ, no matter how many times you hear it, and it gives you a chance to get out of reality in the hustle and bustle of Christmas and sit there and realize what has been given to us with the candlelight and the low lights. I don't understand why more people don't go to a Christmas Eve service.
The candlelight part is one of my favorite moments, with Silent Night and the lights go out, and it's just a really meaningful moment. I agree. Mm-hmm. So what is the biggest challenge facing church music programs today? I'm sure there are many.
Their extinction. That's the most challenging thing. Mm-hmm. So many churches in this area are losing their music departments because participation is falling off. The pandemic did a number on the churches all across, not just music. Mm-hmm. And people got very lazy. And people love not going to church. And they rationalize it in their minds that they deserve that day. And then they label it family time. I'm not going to go into it any deeper than that. But I will say that that is the danger that we are facing right now, is that people are not doing a supportive thing by helping out and getting in there and supporting music departments and churches, either with participation or simply patting everybody on the back and saying, good job. They don't care if music departments are lost in churches. A church building simply becomes a place that has a worship service on Sunday and committee meetings during the rest of the week. That's all it becomes. It loses its meaningful mm-hmm. part, and it loses that major family that is the choir. And when you lose that, you also lose, church organists are few and far between anymore.
We are very fortunate to have Bonnie.
We are. And electric keyboards are a big deal right now. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be short-lived. It really is going to be short-lived. It's like cursive writing. It'll be back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, there are definitely challenges, but there are also perks. And one of those, like we've talked about, is getting to work with the choir. So tell us a little bit about the groups you work with.
Well, I'll start with this group. We have a lot of fun. We feel weird when we're not rehearsing in the summer. We do. You would think they wouldn't, but so many of them have said, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I miss this. It's like being in a drama presentation, and then the play is over, you strike the set, and then you feel worthless mm-hmm. after that. That's kind of the way. There isn't that focus anymore on Wednesday nights, which are at our church. Some of the other choirs I've directed were more into, what robes are we going to wear? Do we want blue? Do we want red? This choir is more into the music and not so much processionals that we use or walking in or where do we stand. They don't get into that sort of thing. And I remember one of the first experiences I had with them, I was directing the very first cantata with them that I had, and they were supposed to do a simple processional in. And we stood back there. They couldn't get it. They could not get it. They couldn't follow. They didn't know where they were supposed to be because that's not their important thing that they worry about. And it was like herding cats. So I just don't do that much with them. We have our standard processional, and we don't deter from that.
Hey, don't fix what's not broken.
Right,
there.
That is absolutely right. Yeah.
So how do you try to encourage participation from different age groups within the church?
I just have to project that what we do is a fun time. We gather socially at least once a year, twice a year most of the time. We have fun at rehearsals, and I have to project that. I'm not one to run around and follow people and stalk them to try to get them into choir. I welcome people who express an interest. Last year, it was a very serious situation because I lost seven. There were five members who went somewhere else, and there were two members who passed away. And they were two very important members mm-hmm. of our choir. And that was awful to try to face. But I replaced those seven with seven more people from the congregation. And they came kind of apprehensive with the whole thing, but they really, really got into it and enjoyed it. So I'm hoping all seven of them come back in the fall. And I just try to admit that it's fun and try not to, I don't want them to think that it's going to be drudgery and that I'm going to be screaming and yelling and all this stuff. I mean, I do that once in a while, but I just want to project that it's a fun activity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So with that, do you have any favorite anthems or hymns that your team likes to perform?
Well, that's the joke. Most of my favorites are not their favorites at all. And I would say my favorite ones to do, and they go, oh, all right. One of them is And Can It Be by Dan Forrest. And another one is that I sent them during the pandemic. Oh, that was another thing I did during the pandemic when we were off, before we went back singing with masks. I would send them by text, the anthem that we were going to do if we had been there, and a recording of it. And then I would also send them favorite meaningful things. And one of the things I sent them was a recording of, I have to stop and think about this for a minute, the Seychelles recording of Slow Down by Chuck Gerard. And it was performed at the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And I sent that recording to them. And I would love for them to do it, but it's very hard to find that piece in a four-part arrangement that a choir could do. But they liked it at that time. And another favorite hymn is Precious Lord, Take My Hand, which was written by Thomas Dorsey in 1932, when he lost his wife and child in a tragic accident. And he wrote that piece. And it's very meaningful. We have an arrangement of it, and they like to do that piece as well.
Well, like we said earlier, you're not going to always please everybody, but it sounds like you're pretty good about picking and choosing some favorites throughout the year. Mm-hmm. So I know we're kind of in a weird time with summertime break, but are there any upcoming concerts or cantatas or worship events you're excited for?
Well, part of my responsibility is to make sure there's special music every single Sunday when the choir's not performing. And so that's important. And I get excited to see what each person I bring in is going to do. And then, of course, the cantata. Mm-hmm. We have a new one that we're going to be doing this year, and it just came in, and Debbie has just marked it and stamped it, and it's, you know, ready to go. It's a Mary MacDonald piece, and I think that everybody's going to enjoy it. And our rehearsals will start for that in October. That's the other thing I try to do, is not rehearse the cantata on Wednesday nights, but we come in on Sunday afternoons and rehearse for that. So starting in October, the choir will be doing two rehearsals a week until Christmas, and then in February they start two rehearsals a week for Advent, or Lent, for Easter.
Well, it's a lot of work, but it definitely pays off, and the congregation appreciates it for sure. So what is your vision for the future of the music ministry at Stout?
I just hope it grows, and that more people come in, because the reality is the average age of our choir is getting to the point where some of them are considering that it's an activity they might not do too much longer. We've got to have people fill those positions. And that's how choirs sometimes fold, is when people leave, you don't have anybody to replace them. And the reason why you don't have anybody to replace them is people have a hard time committing to one and two rehearsals a week. Or they'll say, one of my favorite expressions is when people say, oh, you don't want me in the choir, and letting me fill in the blanks as to why I wouldn't want them in the choir. Anybody can sing in the choir. Anybody can. If you like music, you don't have to read music. I have several people in the choir who don't read music. They know that the old expression, if the music's written on the page higher, then you sing higher, whatever. They get their part by following the other people in their section of where they are. So I just hope that the music department grows. I hope that the praise team in the contemporary service, more people join with them, because right now there are only two in the band, in the contemporary band, and I would like to see. So I guess that's really a duet rather than a band.
Yeah.
And I would like to see more people with that. I have some things in mind, but they've fallen through already, and so I keep working at that. But we just need to make it a focus, because if it goes away, it will change a lot.
Absolutely. It's a very important part of the worship experience every Sunday. And if you're out there listening and you play the guitar or you sing or you play piano, come talk to us. Mm-hmm. There's no audition. You don't have to try out for anything. You're more than welcome to join us there. So with that being said, is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
No, other than the fact I really enjoy where I attend church and being the director there of the music program. And it was a good thing for me to do after retiring from education. It was one of the best steps I ever took to move on and pursue something that this way I can utilize my degree and keep doing that as well. So
absolutely. Well, we are very grateful to have Terry with us today and every Sunday with our choir. And if you're ever, like I said, interested in joining, just give us a shout, and you can check us out on Facebook or YouTube live every Sunday morning. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you for having me.
I will lift mine eyes unto the hills, where does my help come from? My help from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to you will not slumber.
sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. He will keep you from all evil. He will keep your soul.
If you were blessed by this program today and want to know more about how you can become part of the Stout Memorial United Methodist family, tune in to Stout Memorial's Facebook Live worship broadcast just after this program at 10:45 a.m. Send an email to stoutmemorial@gmail.com or attend a worship service in person at 8:45 and 10:45 each Sunday morning. This has been Stout for Christ, a radio ministry of Stout Memorial United Methodist Church, Parkersburg, West Virginia. Yeah.